TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's raised by wolves.
Yes, it is. Happy 4th of July. Danny Cunningham and Dane Moore taking you up until 3 o'clock today here on Score North. You can find us on 1500 AM or the all-new Score North mobile app available on Apple and Android devices. Dane, happy 4th of July.
Haven't they already found us?
Maybe.
If they're listening to you.
I am letting them know all of the ways. Or you can find us at scorenorth.com, wherever you look.
It feels weird to have like a holiday right in the middle of this, right? Like Kawhi could literally sign in the next couple hours.
It feels weird because so much is already done, I think.
Right.
In terms of NBA free agency, where we haven't had a Sunday or... I don't want to say Sunday because July 1st is usually not a Monday and it doesn't, but you get what I'm saying.
Right.
We haven't had a first day of free agency where so much has happened the way it did this year, right?
Right.
So I think that's why it maybe feels a little weird, because if you think back to 2016, which was the last really big summer when Kevin Durant was a free agent and left OKC to go to Golden State, he decided on July 4th. It came out the morning of July 4th. Then if you think back a few more years to 2014, when LeBron was a free agent, leaving Miami, going back to Cleveland, that didn't happen until July 11th.
Oh.
That was July 11th when that happened. So it didn't feel like, oh, we're right in the, like, we're almost done. There's still a couple things left and it's July 4th. It hadn't really even started yet. Yeah. In a couple of summers. So that's what makes it really fascinating, just how different this summer is compared to other ones. Because
do you think there's a reason that it hit so fast, so quick?
I think part of it is moving up free agency, that they moved it up from 12:01 to 6:01 on the East Coast. Sure. In part because if you were a team's priority free agent, you got that phone call at 12:01, or they knocked on your door at 12:01 Eastern, right?
Or you, like, you were or the priority. Like 8 days before.
Sure, but... If they did it the legal way and you were the priority and teams maybe had one, maybe two meetings, and then everyone wanted to go to bed because it was late. So they got done with all that stuff about 6:30, 7 o'clock and said, the sun's still up. We can do stuff. So I think that's why we saw so much get done. And the fact that we saw some of the biggest dominoes, not the biggest one, because Kawhi Leonard's still out there, but we saw Kyrie decide right away. We saw Kevin Durant sign right away. We saw Kemba Walker decide right away. Al Horford decided right away. We saw so many of these big name free agents, Jimmy Butler, another one that just decided right away, that they chose where they were going to play right off the bat. And that really sped things up, because a lot of the second and third and fourth tier guys then have a better picture of what's going to be available and what teams are going to look like when the season comes and where they fit in. And teams have the same idea. Okay, who do we need to surround these new awesome pieces with? So I think that that's part of the reason it moves so much quicker.
Yeah, I think that you bring up like the second or third or fourth tier free agents. And I think that's, I think of Ricky Rubio there. And it seems like a lot of the teams that have had an idea of getting KD were like, all right, well, we're going to put a pause on all our cap space we have here. Sure. Or not KD, rather Kawhi, mm-hmm. or both. And then so these other teams are like, well, let's jump. Like somebody like Phoenix is like, well, let's jump on a guy like this right now, because, you know, if we wait around and we see how the market plays out, then maybe LA's back in it and they're like, we want Rubio. Or yeah. I mean, I'm just using Rubio as an example. Sure. There's a bunch of those. I was just surprised on that first day how many guys went in like that teens area, you know, annually. And that was, I was trying to, I'm like, why would this be it? It's like, okay, so it's early, but why is the reason that it's early? And I think we're going to get into it. Some of the most boneheaded or worst contracts of this kind of free agency period. And I think it's a lot of teams like that who got like a little overzealous, being like, well, we got to act before the Lakers are ready to jump on something or somebody else. Like, we got to use the space before they do, because obviously a second, third tier free agent is going to choose the Lakers over the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you can't necessarily blame them, because it's, you're signing up to go play with two of right. the seven or whatever you want to say best players in the world. And the Phoenix Suns just quite honestly don't have that.
But what Devin Booker.
He's not one of the seven best players in the world. Devin Booker's a very good basketball player. Not one of the seven best in the world.
We don't need to go down a Phoenix Suns rabbit hole, but I've been thinking about them, and like Devin Booker, everyone makes like the Karl Anthony Towns, like, oh, he's going to be in the next AD situation. Like Devin Booker is going to be the next AD. And I know he's not Anthony Davis's caliber.
Sure.
But I mean, I think he's going to develop into a heck of a player. And just, I mean, the way Phoenix the way Phoenix has managed their team is so much worse than the way the Timberwolves have. Yeah. And I just see 3 years from now when that Rubio deal that's like now going to clog up their books falls off, Devin Booker's going to be like, nah, I gotta go somewhere else.
Yeah, and we will definitely be talking about the Ricky Rubio deal at some point today. I can assure you of that. What I did ask you to do for today, and I did this as well, and we did this a little bit on yesterday's Raised by Wolves with Manny Hill and Rami Makhlouf on with myself. I asked you to come up with your five most interesting signings that players made with the team, the five teams that you are most interested in watching once the regular season gets underway in mid to late October of 2019. And then your three or four or five or however many you came up with, just horrible signings that you can't believe actually happened. Because I thought that was going to be difficult. Like I was like, you know what? I don't think that there were a lot of bad signings. And then I started looking at some of them like, I don't like that one. I don't like that one. I don't like that one. I got to like six or seven. Like I did not expect to have to dwindle this list down. But that's where we're at.
It's those like $10 to $15 million deals that go for 3 or 4 years, and that's what the 2016 summer was, you know. Mm-hmm. And now there's these teams. I mean, there's a Chandler Parsons deal yesterday. Solomon Hill, Alan Crabb, Evan Turner, Kent Bazemore. Like what you're choosing is you don't want to be in a spot where you're having to move on those guys 3 years from now.
Was the Chandler Parsons trade yesterday the most depressing thing of the offseason?
I mean, I'm a nerd and I like that stuff. But yeah, it's just like three players who...
Money-wise, it was pretty much a wash. Atlanta opens up a roster spot by trading for Chandler Parsons, but like, it's Chandler Parsons.
He's the best player in that deal, though.
Yeah, but it's still not good.
No, that was the Woj bomb where you just kind of like clear your phone or whatever. You're like, I don't care.
So many people got upset with Woj yesterday because he reported that. He reported the Timberwolves acquiring Jake Layman in a sign-in trade, and everyone's waiting for Kawhi Leonard news, and they're waiting for it from Woj. And it's so funny to go find his tweets at Woj ESPN and read the replies to him when they're not about Kawhi, when it's about like Jake Layman or a pick protection in another trade. Like, it's so funny to just go through and read the replies to his tweets.
It's like, what do you want him to do? You want him to not?
Yeah.
You want to not report it? Like, I'm just going to save these all until Kawhi makes his decision and load them on you.
So the latest Kawhi Leonard decision comes from Chris Carter of Fox Sports 1, former Minnesota Viking.
Noted basketball mind.
Noted basketball mind. He said, breaking news. After very impressive meetings with the Toronto Raptors and others yesterday, reigning NBA Finals MVP Kawhi Leonard and his team haven't made a decision, and there won't be an announcement today. Enjoy the 4th of July. Hashtag Kawhi Watch.
Okay, so why are there such conflicting like reports
because
from these talking heads?
Because no one knows anything.
Exactly. So how can Jalen Rose be saying 99% and Chris Carter be saying this and Jabari Young saying something else? Like, let's just...
I mean, all Jabari Young said was that a decision
wasn't... You almost said Jabari Parker.
I did almost say Jabari Parker. Jabari Young would play better defense. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Jabari Young just basically said there's not going to be a decision today, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's correct.
And he also said it's not going to be a two-year deal.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of interesting. I mean, if I was guessing just like in a completely guess vacuum at the beginning of free agency, I would have guessed 2 year max deal for Kawhi. And then he goes back on the market in 2 years. He's still only 29 at that point.
Didn't rule out a 1 year deal though.
Yeah, I guess. So maybe, yeah. I just think if you're him, you know, do two more years. That lines up with the rest of the Raptors guys that they have on the books that are getting older, and then leave then once you have the 10 years. Once you got 10 years in the league, then you can get the 35% of the cap max, which would be a ridiculous number by the time he's there.
A lot of money.
I mean, I think that'd be the Damian Lillard deal, which is like $200 million. I mean, it's almost $50 million a year.
That's unbelievable. That's so... I can't even wrap my head around
how mad would you be if you're an NFL player?
You're like, oh, so mad.
I got $2.1 million non-guaranteed. Like, yeah.
The NFL has the weakest players union and the weakest collective bargaining agreement. It's unbelievable. Just how... And especially for how violent that sport is and how beat up you get playing that sport, it's unbelievable how unfairly taken care of they are compared to basketball players.
It's such a big gap.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, so Jared Dudley signs for the minimum for $2.5 million, and that's going to be more than like
guaranteed
half the starting running backs in the NFL this year.
Yeah. Fully guaranteed money, baby.
NBA keeps winning.
Yes, absolutely it does. But all right, let's dive into what list do you want to do first? Pick between, give me one of your five between the teams or the player signings, not the negative stuff. That's going to be probably our entire second hour because there are going to be a lot of jokes and it's going to be a lot of fun. So do you want to do teams well,
I'm afraid there's overlap. There's overlap between the individuals and the teams.
There probably will be, but that's okay. We're allowed to have overlap.
Let's do individuals.
All right, individuals. Give me your fifth most interesting signing.
Oh, fifth. We're going reverse order.
Yeah, absolutely. We have to build up to number one. What do you think this is?
Yeah,
we're
but not people just are going to be like, this is so boring.
No, they're not. They're going to love every second of it.
Okay, I like Austin Rivers going back to the Houston Rockets.
I do too. I didn't have that listed, but I like that signing for Houston.
I mean, it's essentially a minimum deal. It's a 2-year deal for $5 million total, 2.5 a year, but the second year is a player option. So I just think you're getting... you're getting a super cheap player that will commit in or will be contributing to that rotation, and I think Houston, when we're talking about who the contenders are in this league right now, that's a team that's like falling by the wayside because we just think there's this Chris Paul, James Harden issue, and Paul gets paid too much, and they're trying to trade Clint Capella and PJ Tucker and all this and that. It's like, well, if we just like turn down, hit mute on all the bogus stuff on the side, and you just look at that roster led by James Harden. That has won 65 games 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, why are we so concerned about that team? And then to add a player who can be your bench Harden, obviously not doing all the same things, but that's what you need is you need a type of guy who can come in and isolate for you at a high level. And he did that with Houston once he got there. He's a well-rounded player for that cheap. I mean, I think that those are the moves you make when you have a James Harden in place.
So Houston didn't quite make, and that signing was not one of my five most interesting. And Houston was probably, when I put together my five most interesting teams, Houston was probably sixth for me. Like I had them on at some point, and then I crossed them off and put someone else in at number five.
Okay.
But we don't talk about them as Western Conference contenders, I think, the way that we probably should. Like you just brought up, they're a year removed from winning 65 games. I think that they could make the case they were the second best team in the Western Conference this past season behind Golden State. So they are a legitimate finals contender, a legitimate contender to win it all this year, in my opinion, because of all the alleged drama that's going on there and all of that stuff. We look down on them as like, oh, they won't be back. They're never going to get back. Their window's closing. Where I think it's the exact opposite. I think that that team has a real chance to make noise.
I think it's just we, as fans, you get into the idea of the new and the like, what you haven't seen yet, and the idea of greener pastures, and you start thinking of a team like Denver, or even like Utah, who's like, oh man, they like, you know, Denver's young and this and that, and Utah made all these acquisitions on the edges, like maybe they could be really good. Well, it's like Houston's already really good.
Yeah.
I mean, they got a year older. James Harden, I'm not worried about him being a year older.
I'm worried about Chris Paul and stuff like that. Like, I'm definitely worried about him as he continues to age and decline a little bit, but they're still really damn good.
I'm worried about Paul Millsap making $30 million a year.
It's a lot of money.
Like, I mean, I'm say the same things about Utah. It's like, that was an imperfectly constructed team, and okay, you got Conley, but he's almost the same age as Chris Paul.
Yeah.
And I mean, not the necessarily the same injury history or recent injury history, but yeah, I just think in general we get a little overexcited about what's new. Who's your guy?
So my fifth most interesting signing is Kyrie Irving with the Nets, and it's interesting to me because Kevin Durant's not going to be playing this year. We all assume. I can't fathom him coming back at least until deep in the playoffs if the Nets make it there after that torn Achilles. Like, I just can't picture that being a situation where he's back in February. Like, sure. I don't see that happening. So I'm curious how much better, if at all, the Nets are as constructed with Kyrie Irving replacing D'Angelo Russell. That fascinates me because Kyrie's absolutely the superior player in terms of talent. He's better on the basketball floor than D'Angelo Russell, and there is no argument there. But D'Angelo Russell, I do think, meant a lot to that culture in Brooklyn. Got these guys in part because they built a tremendous culture. Yep. I'm also curious how he's going to fit in with that roster. Caris LeVert's a very good player, was the leader of that team before he got hurt. Actually, here in Minnesota is when he dislocated his ankle against the Wolves, which was disgusting, but
it's weird, right? Like you're replacing kind of like the three best pieces from Brooklyn last year in D'Angelo, Caris LeVert, and Jared Allen with better versions of them, but they kind of like deplete them and bring in DeAndre.
I don't know if replacing's the right word because.
But they push them down.
Because Caris and Jarrett Allen are still there. Like, Caris LeVert's still going to be a starter for Brooklyn.
Yeah. I guess marginalized.
And Jarrett Allen should be a starter still. Like, DeAndre Jordan should not start on that team.
But I think they're going to start DeAndre Jordan.
I don't like that signing. That didn't make my, like, least favorite signings, but I don't like them giving him 4 years.
He strikes me, though, as a guy who, in an an engaged situation, we'll play better.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right.
He just looks so lazy.
I don't like 4 years for him.
Yeah,
four years is a long time. I realize it's probably what you got to pay. But I could have done like a 2-year deal. I would have been much more comfortable with that. But I'm fascinated to see what Brooklyn looks like. I like Kenny Atkinson as a coach, but Kyrie Irving's going to be his biggest challenge. And that's saying a lot for a guy that coached a team that won 20 games not too long ago.
How good are they going to be?
I think that they're going to be...
like next year.
Next year? I think they'll be good. I don't think they're contenders to win the East. I don't think they're contenders to win it all. I think that they're probably slightly better than they were this year.
I don't think they're contenders for the top four in the East.
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that they're contender to be a top four. Like, I don't think that, but I think they'll be slightly better than the 7 seed that they were, or the 6 seed that they were. Yeah. I could see them be the 5, the 6.
But it feels like people are pushing them up into that, like, Toronto, Philly, Boston area.
It's hard not to, because we forget about Kevin Durant being hurt. And, like, they won the offseason. Some people probably do. You see Kevin Durant and you see Kyrie Irving going to Brooklyn. Brooklyn's going to be real. And they will be, but it's not going to be until the 2020-21 season.
I mean, I just see 4 teams for sure better than them in Toronto, Philly, Boston, and Milwaukee.
Sure.
And then like Miami. I think I'm taking Miami over Brooklyn next year.
I don't think I will. I think Miami is going to be very similar to what Miami has been, just now with Jimmy Butler instead. I don't think that they really improved that much by making that move.
I think Jimmy Butler is way better than Dwayne Wade.
I mean, he's way better than Dwayne Wade, but I still don't. They're going to win 44 games. They're going to lose in the first round. That's what Miami's going to be.
They might lose in the first round. I think they might win more than that. Like, I don't know how they can't be better. Like, what did they really... I mean, they lose Richardson, and they lose Wade.
Losing Richardson hurts.
They lose Whiteside.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean...
I don't think that they're going to be that much improved.
Well, Myers Leonard. Just kidding.
Portland's going to look really different. Portland's going to look very different.
It's exciting. I mean...
very exciting.
Anthony Tolliver, shout out. AT from Minnesota. I think that was an awesome signing for them.
Like, I do
that
too.
Why Portland just could not contend in that Western Conference Finals, besides a massive talent gap between them and the Warriors, is you just got CJ and Dame, and they're just trapping. The Warriors are just trapping that. And who's your pop guy? Myers Leonard? Like, I mean, that's why Myers Leonard had 25 in that first half, because the Warriors were just like, we don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
You put out AT there, and that's a 40% shooter, like... capable guy. I mean, obviously it's not the biggest move they made, but yeah, Portland, I think Portland increased their stocks on this summer.
Definitely. They're on my list of interesting teams. We'll get to that in a little bit, but we do have to take a quick break. You're listening to Raised by Wolves here on Score North, 4th of July special. Dane Moore, Danny Cunningham. We're talking about our favorite things about free agency. We're going to get to our least favorite things about free agency. Before you know it, you're definitely going to want to stick around for that. You can find us on Score North 1500 AM in the Twin Cities. All new Score North mobile app available on Apple and Android. We'll be back after this. Welcome back. Raised by Wolves, 4th of July special. Danny Cunningham and Dane Moore taking you up until 2 o'clock here on Score North, or up until 3 o'clock, excuse me, here on Score North. Talking about our 5 most interesting signings, our 5 most interesting teams heading into the 2019-2020 season. And later in the show, we will get to the things that we hate most about NBA free agency. So far, we've already talked a little bit about the Houston Rockets, a little bit about Austin Rivers going back there as part of a signing, and the Brooklyn Nets, who were the winners of the offseason in the eyes of many by landing Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. So, Dane, you're up. Your 4th most interesting free agent signing of this period.
It was a guy I wanted the Wolves to get, but they were priced out of it, and the Wolves only had their $9 million a year mid-level exception. I thought Patrick Beverley would have fit great here.
Sure.
And we know he fits great in the Clippers and the iteration that they were last season. And I think whether they get Kawhi or not, he's a great piece to add there. And when I'm looking at good signings, I'm looking for guys who are signed for multiple years.
Sure.
And that I have confidence in that deal never, you know, becoming a negative asset. And I know Beverly's kind of had a history of being a little dinged up.
Well, he had that knee injury years back where it kept him out for a full year.
But you look at it, it's just like games played total. I remember writing something about it, like him being an interesting guy for the Wolves to sign. And he's got a lot of like 50 game years, like 58s and stuff like that. Like, I don't remember exactly what all of his injuries are, but I guess that's the only real risk I can see in him. I just feel like with Beverly, and I think the Clippers are going to be moving towards being a more and more aggressive team building for a championship over that 3-year period. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who who you can obviously see fitting in on a championship starting lineup. I don't have any worries about that, but also someone, if you need to clear the space, that you can easily get off of that money and probably bring an asset back too, or he could be a part, he could be the, an outgoing piece, another deal. Like, I just think it's super safe by them. And then obviously his game is dynamic on both sides of the ball. I think he's just an underrated offensive player and one of, if not the best, you know, defender, wing defender in the league.
And he's never going to turn into a negative asset is something that you brought up, because that matters. We know a lot here in this town about some things that may have turned into negative assets in terms of contracts and how they're valued and how they're looked at in today's NBA. So that does matter a big part, because you don't want to be on the hook for...
I feel like you're so bored with the Timberwolves offseason.
I'm not bored with it. I like Jake Layman. I think Jake Layman's a fine player. Noah Vonleh.
It's kind of boring. It's all right.
What's up, Jonathan?
You guys are the Wolves experts in the room. What does Jake Layman do for the Wolves? I saw the trade come across last night. What does that do for the team?
He's a guy that's very low risk that they can take on and hope to get more out of than was gotten out of. He wasn't quite ready for the NBA level by time he got to the Blazers, I don't think. It took him a couple years of development. And then you saw last year, he started to play more. He didn't average over, I want to say, 8 minutes in his first 2 years. And last year, it was almost 18 minutes a game.
He had like 2 months where he was this like... either starting or playing like a 25-minute a game role for them is when Harkless was down. And I mean, he was really good in that stretch for them. He's a great athlete. I think that would be the biggest thing I would tell people, is that, I mean, you're getting a guy who can fly and has a very fast cutter. He doesn't really have a whole bunch of ability to use that athleticism to create for himself. But in Portland, I mean, between Nurkic and the guards that they had, those guys attracted so much, attention in that offense, that Layman was a guy that you would just watch. He'd be cutting back door all the time, and he's you know, a quick grab on the block and up for a layup or dunk. I mean, he's a freaky athlete. The comparison I make is he's Andrew Wiggins. He's like 90% of the athlete Andrew Wiggins is, and without any of the shot selection issues that you see. I mean, he only takes shots that, you know, that are like a high percentage shot. He shot like 66% on twos last year.
Yeah,
a lot of easy just layup buckets. He's not much of a shooter. He's kind of
streaky shooting from the outside.
And I think just watching him shoot, you're like, that's not a...
Although he didn't, like, his second year in the league, I think he shot like 20% from three, which is obviously horrendous.
What, he's playing 8 minutes a night? What did he shoot, like 13 threes?
I forget how many, but it went up to 32 when he actually played minutes, 32 or 33. So there's still plenty of room for improvement there. Don't get me wrong, but that's an encouraging sign.
He can shoot better than Rubio? That's the Rubio rate.
It's an encouraging sign that it did improve.
No, I just think you're getting a safe guy. Yeah. You're getting a safe guy who you can plug in to your bench rotation. And they're going to need, like, they've got a lot of wings right now who are good at like one thing. Mm-hmm. Don't have diverse skill sets. And I think with Layman, you have he has a diverse skill set that he's not really great at anything.
Sure.
But he'll be easy to plug in with an Okogie or with a Wiggins. Like, I don't know if there's someone on the wing you can't put him with. Whereas, like, you look at, like, if Culver and Okogie are playing at the same time, I'm kind of concerned about that, because you have no wing creation in that sort of capacity. I guess Layman there too, but like, he's dynamic in enough ways, but I think people learn to like him.
Yeah, I think that he's going to work hard. Everything I've heard about him is that he's been a terrific professional in Portland, despite the fact that it necessarily wasn't his time to contribute, or he wasn't always ready to contribute when he first got into the league. I think it's more of a case Portland didn't have room for him. He's a guy that's ready to be a real NBA player in a way that he mostly hadn't been for the first part of his career. And Portland at this point just didn't have a choice. And I think that it says something. Portland was willing to work with him on this because they felt bad that they couldn't give him the right situation, but they're hoping that the Wolves can. Like, I do. And they have been a very player friendly organization over the past couple of years. Right. And I think that that's a good sign. He's probably learned under some really smart people and some really good people in Portland. And David Vanderpool, someone who was an assistant coach in Portland, now the associate head coach here. Not a bad thing if you're bringing in someone that he has experience with.
Right. So So Layman's your fourth favorite free agent signing?
No, Layman. Layman did not make my list, believe it or not. My number four is JJ Redick with the Pelicans, because I do think that team, there's something to be said about having an adult in the room. And I know they have Drew Holiday, who kind of serves as that, but JJ Redick is another one there for a team that is incredibly young. I do think to an extent filled with talent. Obviously, they're going to go as far at the end of the day as Zion goes. Like, if Zion turns into this megastar, they're going to be a championship contender for years to come. If not, they're going to be a playoff team for a really long time.
No ifs, ands, or buts. That team's loaded with talent.
Yes.
I don't think that's even a question mark. We started to...
Well, I mean, I think you can question Brandon Ingram's health with the blood clot. Like, that's
but
a
not
concern.
His talent.
No, not talent, but it's a concern because if that becomes an issue, his talent doesn't matter. He can't play.
But some people
are higher... Like, I know you're higher on Lonzo Ball than I am. Mm-hmm. And that's the other difference there. But like,
yeah, like question marks on the guys, but talent nonetheless.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think with Ingram, too, he's a little up and down, but I don't know. I mean, rewind 12 months ago, and when the Lakers and the LeBron comes in, you're like, this could be like LeBron's number two guy a couple years from now. And I don't think he did anything to really like totally ruin that idea that he could be a real solid starter in the league with
upside. He just wasn't ready to be on quite the fast track that they needed him to be on to match up with LeBron's timeline, I think.
And I mean, and to your point with Redick, he fits in on these guys who, while I think they have talent, we talked about Lonzo, Ingram, and Zion, none of those guys can shoot.
Yeah.
They're feeling confident about their shot. So shooting was the biggest need that they needed to address. And what better way to do that for, you know, $13 million a year than bringing J.J. Redick?
And good for J.J. Redick, because he's made quite a bit of money over the past few years, signing the back-to-back one-year deals with Philadelphia and then a two-year $26.5 million deal with New Orleans. He's done really well for himself in free agency. He deserves credit for that.
No, he's worked it for sure. I mean, he's not young anymore.
No.
Nowhere close. Like,
no.
It's like him and Al Horford. They're stringing it out to like show that, yes, I'm still a very much a consistent player that you can put in your rotation. I'm gonna help lead to winning. And I think people just sleep on the shot, how difficult the shots were that J.J. Redick shot.
They're unbelievable hard. Like, ridiculously hard, especially
the hardest.
So many of them that he takes falling away to his right, which as a right-handed shooter is ridiculously tough.
Yeah.
He does that all the time and he makes it look easy. There are two people that shoot moving quite like, well, it's him and Kyle Korver takes a lot of the same shots. Kyle Korver is a little bit bigger in terms of height and wingspan, so it's not as difficult for him because J.J. Redick's like 6'2 or 6'3, if that, mm-hmm. and Kyle Korver's 6'6, 6'7, so that makes it easier for Korver. But it's a very similar game, and they are difficult shots to knock down, and J.J. Redick does it really well.
Discount Ray Allen.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think that's the game. When you talk about the size a little bit, that's the comparison. Like, late career Ray Allen is late career J.J. Redick. Like,
I think J.J. might even be a little bit quicker than Ray Allen was late in his career.
Right.
Like, in terms of the way that... And I assume that New Orleans is going to use him in very similar ways that New Orleans did, but the way that the Sixers would run him off screens, I don't know that Ray Allen was quite that agile and quite that good around screens at this point in his career.
Right.
But J.J. does that really well, and I'm excited to see what he can do with the Pelicans.
Coaching's going to be huge there.
Yeah.
Your point of how do you maximize your one real shooter in your starting lineup? And how do you not highlight the woes shooting wise of Alonzo Ball and Zion? And that's what'll be so I'm excited to watch in Summer League of how they're using Zion, you know, mm-hmm. because if we know anything about Zion's Duke experience is he was used in somewhat of a limiting capacity. It didn't show you the full veracity of the ways in which he can be used on the NBA level. But at the same time, it's kind of like a fine balance. You don't want to ask him to do too much where he's needing to rely on that shot because then that is going to depreciate who he can be. So I think coaching with him is going to be massive. And then you need to bring out the most of Zion. You need a shooter like that around him.
Yeah. And I also think that New Orleans might be able to cover for JJ defensively a little bit better because they're probably a little bit longer. I know Ben Simmons is huge and Philadelphia was huge, but I also think that they're younger and more athletic than Philadelphia was on their front line.
Jrue Holiday and Lonzo Ball as mm-hmm. your two guard defenders. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
I mean, I realize Ben Simmons as a guard defender, wherever they put him, is terrific.
Right.
And Jimmy Butler is a very good defender when he's trying. Tobias Harris, not so much. And Joel Embiid was one of the best interior defenders around. But I think that just because of the length that New Orleans has, they're going to be able to cover for some defensive liabilities that Redick might have.
And I like that Redick played in like a weird positionless team.
Yeah, that's also very good for New Orleans.
Right, because they're going to be weird, like forever.
Incredibly weird.
Because they have a bunch of oddly shaped and skilled guys where JJ has experience of just being like a team, let's put out our five best players and let's make it work. Yeah. And that's what New Orleans is going to need to do this year, next year, and going into the future, because Zion's weird.
I don't know that I see a day where they're not going to say that. Right. And that's how the NBA is trending.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just New Orleans, and it is partly New Orleans because they've got this freak guy that, like, no one's seen things like him, or at least not for a really long time. So, yeah, that makes it different there, but the NBA is trending towards that. Right. We might never see another Zion again in terms of just, like, huge freak athlete, but we're going to see more positionless basketball all across the league, and this is the way that it's going. I think that New Orleans knocked it out of the park with that signing.
Right.
Who do you have for number three?
Redick was on my list. He was actually my number two, but my number three is Robin Lopez.
Okay.
And I like
it's just more, because he gets to play with his brother.
Yeah, that's a big factor. No, I mean, and we'll can get to them maybe when we're talking about the teams, but it's they lost Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah.
That stinks. He's obviously a huge part of that. I think the overwhelming presumption was that the Bucks were going to run it back as much as they could, maybe lose Mirotic. Like, that's what we thought the
most likely. Did not see him going to Spain. I thought they were going to lose Mirotic. Did not see them losing out on him to Barcelona.
He's gone. One way or the other, he's gone.
And they can't get him in a trade now.
Right. It's Robin Lopez is a player, and this past season, too, I was like, man, if you can get him on a playoff team, a contender, he's going to be able to be a guy who can defend at a high level in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And he's just... When for $4-5 million you can get a guy who you feel confident about playing in your rotation in a high leverage game like that, where we assume Milwaukee's going to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's huge. And I know his twin brother's on the team, but they're kind of polarizing type of players.
Oh, they're vastly different.
Yeah. And so it gives them a good mix, I think, during the regular season too, to be able to try a diversity of different, sets and ways that they played. I hope Budenholzer learns a little bit from this past year of, we can't just play one way.
I'm not confident in that, but go on.
I mean, they needed that. They needed that in the playoffs, and Robin Lopez isn't the most diverse player in the league, but it gives you another option. And when you can go do that, I think they're the favorite, if not one of the favorites for sure in the East, to add a piece like that to your team. That's gonna move the needle in the playoffs a little bit. I think that's big. I don't hate what they. I don't hate Milwaukee's offseason, even though they lost Brogdon.
Yeah, I don't hate it either. I was kind of interested that Robin Lopez didn't get bought out last year by Chicago, but he had to spend the entire year being part of the leadership council with the Bulls. That was kind of surprising to me.
It was interesting. He like was out of their rotation, not playing at all. And then, but whenever he did, he's just a very serviceable big. And he was another one I thought I was interested in the Wolves bringing in.
Yeah.
Like the Wolves need that type of guy. I think it'd be interesting to play him alongside Cat. Have Cat kind of more, work as your four in those sets.
Which he does a lot of anyways.
Yeah, with Taj. Like, Taj was the five. Mm-hmm. Cat's labeled as the center, but Taj played...
It's because Cat did the jump ball at the beginning of the game.
Yeah, it's the dumbest thing.
It's what it is.
I almost got him all NBA.
Yes, because he was nowhere near it as a four, but it almost exactly. Got him all NBA. He finished fourth. Honorable mention.
What do you got?
All right, number three for me is, we talked about him a little bit briefly, but Malcolm Brogdon with Indiana. I don't know how this is going to go. I don't know that I trust his injury history, because that foot injury that did cause him to fall to, I want to say he was picked 43rd by the Bucks a couple years ago, that he has missed time in the NBA with it. And this is a big deal for someone with an injury history. When he's on the court, he's really good. 50, 40, 90 guys don't grow on trees. Like, they are hard to find. And Malcolm Brogdon is one of them. So I'm interested to see what he looks like, one, before Victor Oladipo is back from that quad injury that he suffered last year, and two, what he looks like next to Victor Oladipo, because I think that those fits could be night and day. When Oladipo's back, I think that Indiana could look really good, but without him, I think it could be a bit of a struggle.
Well,
but
I think that's the thing is, without Oladipo, Brogdon's going to be asked to do a lot more than he did in Milwaukee.
And that,
like, you're not going to be a 50-40-90 guy.
I'm interested in what he's going to look like.
A different type of usage is going to drive down your effectiveness.
Yeah.
He's not an extremely dynamic player. Mm-hmm. He's a very good player. And I don't know. I think just generally speaking to Indiana, that people seem really excited about their offseason. I think it's because people really like Brogdon. But until Oladipo gets back, I don't think that's going to be a very good team.
Well, and they have all three players in the NBA named TJ. There are only three of them, and they all play in Indiana.
That's just super bizarre. I don't know. I mean, it's just, they're a, I don't think we were talking about before that, like, top tier of the East, that the four, those top four teams. Like, I don't think Indiana is in that anymore. Like, as
not without Oladipo.
And without Bogdanovich. They lost Bogdanovich, too. Like, this,
we'll get to him in a second, trust me.
they're just... I'll pump the brakes on them a little bit. I think Brogdon's a good player, but as a team, we're going to have to see what it looks like once Oladipo's back and like what percentage of Oladipo comes back.
Yeah.
You know, is he 70%? Is he 95% of what he was? And it just seems a little risky to have two guys with pretty extensive injury histories and both Oladipo and Brogdon. I don't know. I'd love to see a small market like that, you know, make some moves and build kind of organically after losing Paul George, but it's, I don't know, to be determined.
Yeah, definitely to be determined, and it's going to be interesting what they look like. I like the way that they were able to just quickly rebuild after trading away Paul George. It sucks that Oladipo got hurt, and if he's healthy and if he's what he was, they could be a top four team in the East. I'm not super confident in Boston. I know we might disagree a little bit there. I'm not on as high on them as I think you are, but... It's going to be fascinating what they look like. We've got your number two was J.J. Redick, right?
Mm-hmm.
So after this break, we'll get to my number two and then both of our number ones for five most interesting NBA signings of this offseason. Been a fascinating free agent period. We're waiting on Kawhi. Maybe if Kawhi news breaks during the break, we're just going to scrap this and talk about the Raptors. But
what, you're saying he's going to the Raptors?
I mean, Jalen Rose said 99%, and then Frank Isola said 99.9% today, so... Maybe we'll talk about the Lakers or the Clippers. But this is Raised by Wolves. Dane Moore, Danny Cunningham. You're listening to Raised by Wolves on Score North.
Jonathan here with the Score North download before we get back to the boys on Raised by Wolves. Something we're doing on our app and our podcast format here. Check out Minnesota Sports Rewind, where Score North personalities go back in time and do deep dives into some of the most prominent moments in Minnesota sports history. Right now, we've got episodes on Twins and Tigers, game 163, Twins A's from the 2002 ALDS, a couple basketball ones here, Kevin Love's 30-30 game, and Kevin Garnett's dominating game 7 against Sacramento. Again, it's called Minnesota Sports Rewind. You can find it on scorenorth.com, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts. Now, back to Raised by Wolves.
Thank you, Jonathan. It is Raised by Wolves. Danny Cunningham and Dane Moore taking you up until 3 o'clock here on Score North in the all-new Score North mobile app available on Apple and Android devices. We've so far been going down our favorite signings or most interesting signings, and we will get into our most interesting teams and then least favorite signings over the course of the next hour and 13 minutes. So your top four or most interesting signings have been Austin Rivers, Patrick Beverley, Robin Lopez, and J.J. Redick. For me... I have had Kyrie Irving, J.J. Redick as well, Malcolm Brogdon. My number two is Bojan Bogdanovic in Utah. I really do like what Utah did this offseason. I think that they are, for the first time since 1998, you can say the Utah Jazz can win the Western Conference. And I think that Bogdanovic is going to give them a lot of shooting, and they're going to be a very tough defensive team out West.
We got a disagreement.
Really? You don't like this?
No, Bogdanovic made my honorable mention bonehead once.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's... And I think I think you're more thinking of right now. I agree he's gonna help him right now, but it is a 4-year, almost $75 million deal. Yeah. Like it's not cheap and it's long.
Yeah.
And I think Utah's looking at a window right now, and it's kind of the Chris Paul sort of thing where you're like, well, this is what it costs for us to get him. Might hurt us in the back end a little bit. But I don't know. I mean, with Conley and everything, like, give me the pitch for why Utah is the best team in the West.
I think they've got shooting. I think that they finally have someone else other than Donovan Mitchell that can create offensively.
That's big.
Because they didn't have that before.
Jingling Joe.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't have that before. Joe Ingles couldn't create the way that Mike Conley will be able to create for them.
Both left-handed.
Yes. That's about where the similarities start and stop. I think they'll be really good defensively. I like some of the other signings that they made as well. Like, I like Jeff Green for the veteran minimum there.
Ed Davis.
Ed Davis, I think, is... I
also
don't know.
Left-handed.
That's really... Okay, this is weird. Like, they've got probably a third of the left-handed players in the NBA on their roster, it feels like. Sure, and they're all good. I think Ed Davis... What they got Ed Davis for, because wasn't it 2 years, $10 million? For Ed Davis, that's a steal for him. He continues to just be underpaid. Like, I thought he was going to get more than that on the open market. I think that that's a big win for Utah to play alongside Gobert at times and as Gobert's backup at times. That's an upgrade for them. I really like what they have.
So, okay, so the Utah Jazz are better than the Houston Rockets and Golden State Warriors next year. Why?
I think they're better than Golden State because Golden State's going to have no depth. They have the thinnest margin for error that they've ever had. Steph Curry's someone that has been dinged up quite a bit. He's avoided a catastrophic injury, but he's always had these stretches in his career. Well, recently a catastrophic injury. His early ankle injuries, I think you could consider sure. catastrophic, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking like MVP level Steph Curry has avoided a big injury. But he's always had these little things where he's been dinged up. Draymond Green hasn't been an 82-game player for a few years now. He's been one of the best 16-game players that there ever has been, but he hasn't been an 82-game player. I don't know how well D'Angelo Russell fits in schematically to what they have. And Klay Thompson, when he's going to come back, is a question mark. We don't know when he's going to play again for them. And we don't know what he's going to be exactly the first year back from this. I think that their outlook for the 2020-21 season looks pretty good. More mm-hmm. so what it's not what it was with Kevin Durant, because that's no team's ever going to really achieve that type of outlook. But they're going to look like maybe the 2014-15 Warriors again. Maybe those guys are obviously all at that point 6 years older than they were. But I think that their margin for error is so small, and I don't know that they can keep up for 82 games the way that they'll need to be able to.
So let's spill this over into my number one, because I think it overlaps. And my number one is Klay Thompson.
Okay.
And I think Klay Thompson's injury has been put in the same bin as Kevin Durant's, because it happened in the finals. They both played for the
sure,
Warriors.
That's fair.
But like, when is Klay Thompson back? He literally just had his surgery. Like, what's the timetable on an ACL now?
6 months-ish, a little more than six. I think 6 months is being a little optimistic.
So like,
I think,
post-trade deadline,
yeah,
he's back.
Post-trade deadline, that's a lot of time to miss. And when you do come back post-trade deadline, what are you going to look like right away? Because it's
you got 25 games to figure it out.
You do have 25 games to figure it out. I'm not talking the team, I'm talking Klay. Mm-hmm. What is Klay going to look like? Because when guys do have a major injury like that, an ACL tear is not the Achilles injury that Kevin Durant
yeah,
had.
It's
like,
not,
those are
it's,
two different
and
things.
And it's not the Gordon Hayward thing, and it's not the Victor Oladipo thing.
Correct.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like, there's like tiers of this.
Correct. But it's still going to take probably half a season of playing for Klay to get back to feeling like Klay again.
Maybe.
That's part of my issue, is when you do have a major injury like that and a reconstructive surgery, like rebuilding part of your knee, essentially,
yeah,
it's what it is. That worries me to the extent of he's going to need time to start to look like Klay Thompson again. Even mm-hmm. if Kyrie Irving, when he hurt his knee, it wasn't as bad as Klay Thompson's, I don't think. When he hurt his knee in 2015 finals and had knee surgery.
Broke his kneecap.
Yeah, it was not quite as bad as a torn ACL. And it's still, he wasn't himself. He started playing in December. He wasn't himself until April or May. And those types of things do concern me. I realize that medically we are so advanced now, and it is so much better.
Particularly with the ACL, man. I just think it's becoming more and more prevalent where you have a guy go down with an ACL and they don't really miss a beat when they come back.
I just think there will be an adjustment period for him, and that concerns me.
And I think that's that 25 games post-trade deadline. And then we get to the playoffs, and to continue with the Golden State-Utah comparison, you put them against each other in a playoff series. I mean, let's go down it. Like the best guys to worst guys. You go Conley versus Curry. I'm taking Curry.
Sure.
You go Gobert versus Draymond, and I think that's close.
I mean, you would put, or if you're not doing it positionally.
No, I'm going best players. The best okay. player on Utah.
Okay, that's close.
You know what I'm saying?
Draymond and Gobert is close.
That's
Draymond
close.
Can do more things offensively in terms of facilitating and handling the ball, and Gobert is the best big man defender in the NBA.
Right. And then for Utah, they're like 3-4 is Mitchell and Bogdanović or Ingles?
I would go Bogdanović because
yeah,
I think
so
Bogdanović is probably a little bit better defender. I mean, Joe Ingles is a really good shooter, and he's a fine defender in his own right, but I would probably lean Bogdanović there.
And then the package versus those two is D'Angelo Russell and Klay Thompson, and I'm taking D'Angelo Russell and Klay Thompson.
I'm not as high on D'Angelo Russell. I think he would have been fun here and something to be exciting here.
I just think it's not close if Klay is 100% himself.
I don't see Klay being 100% himself,
and 90%
I'm concerned about what they will look like by time Klay gets back, because there's a good chance that a team that hasn't had a break for the past 6 years isn't ready to go right away. And with that margin for error just gone right now, and that's the way it is, what if something happens to Draymond, which it has plenty of times over the past couple of seasons? What if something happens to Steph? That's a team that could be fighting for a playoff spot.
But we can say the same thing about Conley.
Sure, we can. But I also think that his injury history is further in the past, where Draymond's had a shoulder and a hip injury over the past, two or three seasons? Ongoing. And Steph has had knee injuries, and I mean, I'm not going to count a finger injury because that's like your
ankles. I think the biggest.
That's always going to be the thing because of what that's been. And he has had ankle injuries over the past couple of years. I just think that their margin for error is so small, and it's
I see Utah kind of like Denver last year. It's like they could be one of the best teams in the West during the regular season, but it's a different game in the postseason. And I'm taking that Golden State team. I'm taking that Golden State team versus them where, the Golden State's going to have to figure out a lot of stuff during the regular season. There's going to be hiccups. But I think they're on this arc where they could be pretty, in a good place come the playoffs. I mean, it's going to be, 9 months from now. I feel like that's enough time to figure out the Clay injury, to figure out your depth a little bit. I mean, they're going to land a couple buyout guys.
Are they going to be able to land buyout guys? Because they're going to be hard capped, and they're already really close to
That's a good call.
That's because that's they're... Call. They're only going, their depth is so shot because they're going to be hard capped at $6 million above the tax line. So it's $138 million for the hard cap, right?
Yeah, no, they're screwed there.
They're going to be hard capped and they're going to have to, they're only going to be able to carry 13 guys because of that. And one of them is going to be Clay, who won't play until probably January at the earliest, I think we could probably say.
Right.
So that's another thing that's going to sap their depth. They're not going to be able to not play Steph 35 minutes a night, or Steph is probably, if he's going to be healthy, he's going to see an uptick in minutes.
Right.
And that's out of necessity.
No. So then it becomes, they might need to make a trade, and that would be the D'Angelo Russell potentially trading him for
correct.
That could benefit them for the reason of, if we can get two guys back for D'Angelo Russell's price.
Yeah.
Or slightly below, it'll give us a little bit more flexibility. I just think they got time to figure it out a little bit. And to me, the narrative of them, this is just going to be a holding year for Golden State, when the league feels as wide open as it does right now, I'm just not ruling out Golden State.
You can't rule them out. You absolutely cannot rule them out.
Right.
But I wouldn't peg them as the favorites right now with everything that's gone wrong for them.
I just don't think it's... certainly during the regular season, I agree. Golden State is not going to win the most games in the West.
They will not be the one seed.
That might be a four seed.
Yeah, I think 4, 5, 6. I would be surprised if they finish above the 3 seed, but anything below the 3 seed wouldn't shock me.
Sure.
Because if one little thing goes wrong and they don't have that depth, they could be looking at fighting for a playoff spot down the stretch.
I think they might be the second most likely team to come out of the West, I think.
I wouldn't go that far. I don't think that I'd go that far. You are definitely more optimistic than I on them, and that's fine. I mean, they've won the West 5 straight years. I just think that this is going to be a bit of a year where they're out of gas right now. I think that they kind of feel okay. Maybe this isn't our year, and that's okay because it's been our year 5 years in a row, but maybe next year is our year again. And I think that that's a logical and realistic way to look at it. And for a front office that has said, hey, we're light years ahead of everyone else, maybe that's the best approach, where they did make that D'Angelo Russell sign and trade, and it could make sense for them to try and trade him or put a lot of usage on him this year and burn him up and then trade him next summer for depth.
The running back,
Yes, exactly. Let his usage rate be absurd.
Right.
That's not the worst strategy in the world. It's not going to get you very far this year, but it's not the dumbest thing in the world to do, because then reset.
I just don't think I don't think you give up a year of Steph Curry's prime.
I get that, but when you've had...
It's different than LeBron was last year.
Oh, it's absolutely different than LeBron, but when you've also played so many extra games over the past 5 years, going to the NBA Finals 5 years in a row is like an entire extra season.
No, you're right. You're right there. I mean, I certainly understand the question marks around that team. I think it's a really good organization.
Yeah.
That can find a way to get something out of the depth, whether that's finding McKinney developing into a guy who he can be our eighth man, and that's fine. And a lot of those other guys, Jacob Evans was the 30th pick last year. He didn't do anything for them. Develop him, find ways to make those guys really important, and because they're going to be important for them
to be
important. They have to be. Yeah, right.
They're going to miss Andre Iguodala a lot.
Yeah, totally.
That's one thing that we haven't mentioned when we've talked about them.
And Livingston will probably be gone too.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Yeah. Even if he were back, I don't know how much that he just wasn't very good this year.
Yeah, he wasn't very good, but it like got minutes, ate up some minutes.
Yeah.
Innings eater or whatever. Like.
Yeah, exactly. But they're going to miss Andre Iguodala a lot as someone who was there for the entirety of that run and really was a key piece into them making that run. They're going to miss him a ton.
I just, to wrap up my Clay thought is, I think you're locking up one of the best players in the NBA for 5 years and ACLs are not what they used to be.
Yeah, I don't have concern about him long term not getting back to what he was. Mm-hmm. I have concern about this upcoming season not being a Klay Thompson season. Like in 2020, 2021, I'm with you. The Warriors could come out of the West. Yeah. No doubt in my mind. I have my questions about this upcoming season.
It's just fascinating that there's such a question mark.
It is.
It's one of the...
because they've been the known commodity.
Yeah.
That's why. It is. It's just that. It's fascinating.
Who's your number one?
Number one is Al Horford signing with Philadelphia. We're going to get to that after the break because it's 2 o'clock here on Score North. We need to hit a break. We'll be back after this with Rick by